Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Wizen World Cup Daily Podcast. Before today, I think you could have been forgiven for skipping this game. Both teams are already basically out of semi-final contention, and now Sri Lanka definitely are. The smog meant we weren't sure if we would get a game at all, but this is the thing about cricket. It's just when you're not looking that something ridiculous happens. And that's exactly what we got with Angelo Matthews, the first batter in the 150 plus year history of international cricket to be given timed out. Here with me to discuss today's game is Estelle Vasudevan. Estelle, there was also a very good game of cricket that was played today, but let's start with a timed out dismissal because that's all anyone wants to talk about. If anyone didn't happen to see it, Angelo Matthews came out to bat when Sudhira Samarawickrama got out. He was all ready to face up and then his chin strap on his helmet breaks. He then asks for a replacement, at which point Shakib Al Hassan has a polite inquiry with Maria Erasmus, who confirms the two-minute time limit is up and Matthews has to walk off, throwing his helmet over the boundary as he crosses the rope. Estelle, what was your immediate reaction to that moment?
From a Sri Lankan point of view, right? I think immediately my reaction was to blame Matthews in the sense that, you know, the tournament has been so shambolic for Sri Lanka and just the approach has been so kind of almost, or it has seemed quite lazy. So just seeing that, I was thinking maybe he could have just faced that first delivery, right? And no one would have had a problem with him switching up helmets after that. Or he could have faced, it was Shakib bowling, so he could have faced up without a helmet. But I think just, you know, as time went on and you kind of let yourself think about it, I would personally think that Matthews is quite unlucky because, as you said, it hasn't happened before in international cricket. And all the other cases of when it's happened is, I think, when they haven't actually even turned up to the crease. Mm-hmm. In this case, like you said, he got to his crease, he took his guard, and I think he tried to tighten his helmet and the strap just came off. He immediately called for a helmet, which is probably what any batter would have done in that circumstance. Maybe he could have kind of run it past the umpire just to keep him in the know, like, you know, this happened, I need to get a helmet. Is that okay? But I mean, in hindsight, that's easy to think about, right? But in that moment, seeing as it hasn't happened before, I don't think he expected it to happen. But at the same time, Shakib Al Hassan is well within his right to appeal there, right? Because it's within the laws. And he said as much at the post-match presentation as well, as long as it's within the rules, you have to do whatever you can to win, right? So it's a strange one for me. I think it's within the law, but maybe the law needs to be amended to kind of capture this kind of incident because it doesn't have any provision for if your equipment don't fail, right? Right. I mean, if it had been if it had been something else, like an arm guard or something, it's different. But the helmet is obviously far more critical to player safety, right? So, it's a tricky one. I think Shakib Al Hassan he's within his rights to appeal. I think the umpires maybe could have done something different. But yeah, ultimately the problem is perhaps in the law itself.
Yeah, because I guess also the umpires are also hamstrung to an extent because the law as it's written doesn't have any sort of provision for that. And you're right, I don't think it would be too hard to put in there something like unless the batter has a legitimate reason for not being ready or something, because it's tricky because there's a lot of things going on. He is definitely unlucky to an extent because, you know, it's a freak thing that happens that your helmet breaks when you're just tightening a chin strap. Equally, that's not, in a way, that's not Bangladesh's problem. So, and Adrian Holdstock, who's the TV umpire, did a quite interesting interview at the at the innings break. So he's two things that he said. One was that Matthews, actually the 2 minute time limit had actually just elapsed, like basically at the point when the helmet does break. So he's already sort of pushing that limit anyway. And also he was asked about, does he think the law should be changed? And he basically said, I don't think so. It's not too much to ask for a batter to have their equipment ready and to be ready. And that is also a fair enough point, I guess, that you could be testing these things before you come out. But yeah, I wouldn't be averse to a change of the law. But as I said, the umpires are stuck in this situation because they did ask Shakib a couple of times, do you want to withdraw an appeal? And once Shakib appeals, and by the letter of the law it's out, the umpires, again, they don't have any power there to say he's not out because we don't think the law should be this way. That's the way that the law is, I guess. It is a weird one where I don't know if anyone's done too much wrong. I mean, it's cheeky from Shakib, and I can see why people are talking about the spirit of cricket, but I can also see the argument that if something's in the laws, you just do it. I can see the argument that the law should be amended, especially, you know, there's so much focus on player safety and particularly around head injuries and stuff, that would a player want to face up for even one ball without a helmet? Maybe not. It's in a way, it's almost amazing that it's never happened before, especially I was reading about some of the times when it could have happened. So there was one, do you know what this one? So I think it was Sourav Ganguly in a test match in 2007. Yeah. So Sachin Tendulkar was carded to come in at number four, but he'd spent the last few minutes of the previous innings off the field. India then lose two really quickly. So Tendulkar can't actually come out yet. And Ganguly is like, oh, wow, I'm the one who's going to have to come in. Is absolutely not ready. He said he was still in his tracksuit. So he takes 6 minutes to come out. And he could well be within his rights to be out, timed out then. And it just hasn't happened somehow. I guess just you kind of think it never will. And then it does. And you're like, how has it not happened until now? I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, I was just thinking in the context of like the boundary count, right? Last time, it's all down in writing and everyone agrees to it. But until it happens, you don't realize how, I mean, it might be ridiculous in some circumstances. It's a tricky one. I feel like also Bangladesh are in a situation where they're not winning, right? So you have to take everything that comes your way in that sense. A lot of Sri Lankan fans will not agree with me on that because, you know, you tend to bring morality into it. But at the end of the day, if it's within the rules, then they have the right to do that, right?
Mm. And that was exactly what Shakib said. He said something like, we're in a war, so that's what we've got to do. And I guess it was also just such a perfect moment just in terms of the characters involved. Like, if you could have picked a captain who would be the first person to enforce this, Shakib would have been quite high on the list. And Angelo Matthews, for some reason, just feels like the perfect victim as well in some ways. Like, he's got a really good sort of like, what's going on here kind of face. And then Maria Erasmus, such a great umpire, but also enjoys sort of like the cheeky side of things, I think. So you could see him when he was having this discussion with Shakib and he realized Shakib isn't gonna withdraw it, and he just sort of, this smile starts sort of spreading across his face. And even sort of like Chris Silverman and Alan Donald involved as well. Alan Donald sort of having a chat with Andrew Matthews in the tunnel. And then you obviously had the perfect sort of coda to it when Matthews gets Shakib out finally and then just gives him the gentle little tap on the watch as he goes on his way, which was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah, he could have had him early. I think Charit Asalankar kind of denied us of what would have been like perfect revenge, right? Because I think Sri Lanka did get under his skin. He got a lot of chat when he came out. Shakib got a lot of chat from the fielders when he came out. Matthews also, you know, talking to him. He doesn't sledge much, but you know, this game, perfect time to do it. And then Asalankar put down the catch. So, unfortunate. But in the end, he got Shakib and he also got Chanta, who I think, according to what I've seen, is the guy who suggested maybe they should go for the timed out appeal. So, kind of retribution. But I think Matthews would have preferred if Sri Lanka just won and he didn't get any wickets.
Yeah, I mean, because that it was a massive moment in terms of the game, right? I mean, it was a close thing in the end. Matthews, you know, is the kind of player that would have maybe got them past 300. But I guess it's also so typical Shakib as well to come out and play that brilliantly, having done something like that, having had such a poor tournament up until now. Like not even like he's fired up. He just knows that it would be like almost like such a fitting moment for him to play a brilliant innings. It's not like he's come up with a point to prove because he's the one who's done the timed out dismissal. Like, you know, it'd be but he just, yeah, he's just such a great cricketer for that kind of needle. And I guess Matthews also, I mean, he bowled well against England and bowled really well here. And given he hadn't bowled at all international cricket since the start of the pandemic, it's kind of crazy he bowled that well. And this is probably his last week in ODI cricket and he's finished it off like this.
Yeah, it's funny, right? Because it seems like the less he bowls in preparation, the better he is in match time. Because even in 2019, he had, you know, he took a wicket of Nicholas Pooran, which was kind of, you know, changed the context of the game completely. On whether it'll be his last week of ODI cricket, we don't know that because strange things happen with Sri Lanka cricket. And at the moment, there's a bit of chaos back home. So we don't know. I mean, I did see, I think it was Steve Harmison saying that maybe he should have been made captain instead of Kusal Mendis. So who knows?
Yeah. Well, that'll do for part one. In part two, we will discuss a bit more of that chaos in Sri Lankan cricket and also more of the actual cricket in this game. Estelle, while everyone was talking about the timed out dismissal, Asan Anker was putting together a kind of brilliant 100, wasn't he? And he's been one of the stars for Sri Lanka in this competition.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the type of guy who I felt was kind of, you know, got a bit fired up with that dismissal, started trying to go after the bowling a bit after Matthews was given out. And it really worked for him, which is a funny thing because if you look at Kusal Mendis, right, he started the tournament off with such a big impact, scoring at like 150. And then he seems to have gone back on what worked for him. Asan Anker has been conservative in the past games, but today he was a lot more aggressive and it worked for him. And I think it also helped that he came in a lot earlier than he usually does. So he had that time to build an innings. But he's definitely, I mean, for a long, very long time, he's been earmarked as a future captain for Sri Lanka. So he's really performed well in the last couple of years. Sri Lanka will want a little bit more consistency from him. But today's knock, I think, was perhaps the best he's played in ODI cricket.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Mendis there, because we had a few questions around the issue of captaincy, one aspect of it being who should lead Sri Lanka, I suppose, past this tournament. Does Shanaka just slot straight back in when he's back fit? And also people asking, do we just look at captaincy as being the reason for Kusal Mendis' sort of like downturn in form in the World Cup, or is something else going on there?
I think on Shanaka, it's tough to see him returning as captain. He should come in as kind of a middle order batter because he's one of the only or one of the few batters who can clear the boundary in Sri Lanka. So at least for the year preceding the World Cup, maybe you have him in the lineup. But I'm not sure you can really bring him back as a captain because he's really struggled in the ODI format. But I think if you really look at it, how much ODI cricket are Sri Lanka going to be playing, right? In the coming year or so, I don't think there's going to be that much. So it might not really be that much of an issue because with the T20 World Cup coming up next year, definitely the focus is going to be on that. Kusal Mendis, I personally think that there's definitely a mental issue there with pressure because he's a guy who's promised so much from a young age. He's performed, he's played some incredible innings, right? But there's also times when the pressure's on and he's not really able to cope with it. Apart from his batting, if you look at his captaincy also, he started off really well. I felt like his captaincy in the England game in particular was really good, where he rotated his bowlers really well, kept, you know, England under pressure. But also in the games following that, we've seen where, you know, guys like Mahesh Teekshana, he's not really trusted him much. And this is a guy who's done well for you over the last 18 months, right? He hasn't had the best of World Cups, but he's been that, you know, consistent performer with the ball for you. So in crunch situations, that trust can do a lot for Teekshana's confidence. Situations like that, I feel like there's been a bit of a backward step taken by Kusal Mendis. And even with his batting today, I thought he was really conservative. It might have been because in the previous couple of games, he's tried to play attacking cricket, which is what you want from him. But unfortunately, he's been dismissed, right? So today he went the opposite direction and ended up like facing 30 deliveries, but not getting too much runs. So it's kind of like, you know, do you value getting like a 20 off 10 deliveries, or are you looking at more of a conservative knock from a guy like Kusal Mendis, who we know can score at a good rate?
Isn't she mentioned Teek Shana? We will come on to Bangladesh later on, by the way, but we've had a lot of questions about striking cricket, and while we're talking about it, a lot of them from Lalu Sharma, so thanks for those. I mean, Teek Shana would have been one of the great hopes of the Sri Lanka bowling unit coming into the tournament, right? And he's taken 5 wickets at an average of nearly 70. I mean, I mean, you can look at it and just look and see that he's not bowling as well as he has. But it is puzzling, because I'd expected when him and Hasranga, when they both were going to play, I would have looked at him as more of the threat against the bigger side, because it seemed like he had more of that consistency in his bowling, and that seems to have completely eluded him. Is it just the trust that he's lost, or is it that, has he possibly been found out? Has it been that he's just out of form, or is it that he's not got his partner Hasranga alongside him? What do you think's happened there for him?
I think it's a combination of things. He hasn't bowled as well as you would expect him to. There's no denying that, right? But I also feel like his role within that setup, when Hasranga is there, he's not your main wicket-taking option, right? Mm-hmm. He's more of the guy who contains and creates opportunities for the guys on the other end. And in the last couple of years, obviously Sri Lanka has played a lot more T20 cricket than ODI cricket, but he's used the new ball a lot more than we've seen in this World Cup, which is fair because Sri Lanka have good fast bowlers who can really make use of the conditions with the new ball in the World Cup. So when it comes to kind of in the power play, when you're bowling and you're not conceding a lot of runs, the likelihood of you picking up a couple of wickets is high, right? So I feel like he's been out of form, but also his role has changed and he's found it difficult to cope. You have to also consider the fact that he's not a very experienced guy, right? He's been playing international cricket only for a couple of years, and Sri Lanka haven't been facing top quality opposition for most of that period. So it is hopefully something that he learns from. I don't know if you noticed, but at the end of the game, we saw like the camera focused on him and how kind of distraught he was, because he knows that the responsibility is on him to pick up wickets and to, you know, do the job for his captain, and he wasn't able to do it. So obviously he knows what he's supposed to do. He just hasn't been able to really find what works for him to transition from that guy who doesn't concede runs to the guy who doesn't concede runs and also picks up wickets.
Mm, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that was almost tough to watch that right at the end when he was face down on the floor having conceded that final boundary. Because I guess especially, you know, Sri Lanka, it was weird actually. If they had won today, you look at it and you think like actually not loads needs to go their way for them to finish equal on fourth on points at least, because all that would have needed would have been England to beat Pakistan and Sri Lanka themselves beat New Zealand and for Afghanistan to lose those two games. All of those things could have happened, but now obviously they're out of the race. On Bangladesh, I guess it's not been a great World Cup for them in general, and even the bright spots they have had might have worried them in a way, like when it's Mahmudullah who's scoring the runs, that would be a concern for them. So it would be encouraging for them that Najmul Hussain Shanto, who he had 28 runs in 6 innings before today, so started the World Cup with a 50, didn't get another double figure score since then, but played really, really nicely for that 90. But then also Tanzim Hasan Saqib, who's played so little, well, cricket of any description, but especially international cricket, he looked sharp, didn't he? I mean, he went for a few, which bowlers of that type can, but he rushed good batters, which is the kind of thing that you wonder, Alan Donald gets him under his wing for a few months, what he might turn him into, I guess.
Yeah, I think Shanto was a big positive for Bangladesh because he got runs in the Asia Cup and looked like really one of those solid batters, right? Bangladesh have been kind of struggling to move on from those big three, from Shakib, Mushfiq and Mohammadullah, but in Shanto they have someone who's been solid for a while. So it was good to see him back in the runs. I felt like, you know, in that situation where he was batting, like I mentioned before, there was a lot of chat from Sri Lanka and there would have been a lot of pressure there as well in that partnership. So he's kind of, the way he played kind of steadied things a bit, I felt, because Shakib was obviously attacking the bowlers much more. In terms of Tanzid, I think, like you mentioned, he rushed all the batters. He bowled the bouncer really well. I felt like he's kind of that kind of bowler who you don't look at once and think he's really quick, but who can really, you know, hurry the batters up. He bowled well at the death. I felt the way he bowled to Mahesh Tikshana and the tailenders ensured that Sri Lanka didn't get those extra 10 to 15 runs, which could have made a difference in the end, because I think the last three wickets went for one run or something. Mm. So that was really promising for them. I think this Bangladesh side, it's, although they haven't performed well, there are certainly points of promise. Like you would look at and think, you know, in 4 years, if the 50-over World Cup is still relevant, you could really have some star players in that 11.
Just going back to Sri Lankan cricket, and the sort of the other theme of the questions we had was on the Sri Lankan cricket board themselves. I mean, you were saying this is a developing situation and we're kind of learning new stuff all the time. But if I'm understanding it right, they've all been sacked. Is that correct, or is that an oversimplification of what's going on?
The sports minister has basically suspended the board temporarily,
okay,
and appointed like a interim committee headed by Arjuna Ranatunga. So according to the letter he sent, this is not to do only with the World Cup performance, but there were some issues concerning last year's T20 World Cup and finances, and you know, it took a legal turn, right? So according to him, that is one of the reasons for appointing this interim committee to look into everything that's going on, the mismanagement of funds, all of that. But there's also been a cabinet subcommittee appointed by the president of the country to look into this suspension by the sports minister.
Okay.
And, you know, to kind of overlook things, I suppose. So like I said, I mean, this happened this evening, so we don't know what will happen in the coming days. Arjuna Ranatunga and his committee, I think, were at SLC today. It'll be interesting actually to see what happens. I think the timing could have waited until the tournament was done. But yeah, it'll be interesting couple of weeks, and let's see how it goes.
Yeah, crazy that that happens while Sri Lanka still have a theoretical chance at the semi-finals. You wonder what happens to the interim committee if they actually do somehow squeak through. But I guess good for that it hasn't. And it's also funny that, I don't know, cricket's supposed to be a sport where political interference isn't allowed in the running of cricket in the country, and we've got political interference in the political interference at the moment in Sri Lanka. but yeah, that's good to know. And good to know you're as not quite as confused as I am, but that it's not as simple as I worried it might be when I was struggling to make sense of it. Looking ahead to tomorrow, Australia play Afghanistan. If Afghanistan were to win that, it would set the semi-final race up beautifully. The big sort of bit of team news is that Steve Smith is a bit of a doubt, suffering with a bout of vertigo, which he was talking about in the press conference. So he had a net, but it didn't sound like he was shaping up great in there, but maybe he'll wake up tomorrow feeling fine. Cricket Australia have confirmed that the game will go ahead. I had a chat with Cameron Ponsonby about the background of Australia's previous boycott of Afghanistan this year. That was on last Friday's podcast after the Afghanistan-Netherlands game. So I think if you want more info, that's a place to go. But yeah, should be an interesting game, and one that, yeah, as I say, could set up the semi-final race beautifully. And if not, I guess adds a bit more spice into that Champions Trophy race, which Bangladesh have really inserted themselves into, I suppose, because England might have thought if we beat Netherlands, we'll be on 4 points, we'll get our net run rate above theirs, and that should be enough to see us above them and above Bangladesh. Now Bangladesh have got a decent net run rate on 4 points. Sri Lanka, best net run rate than England on 4 points. It's all shaping up that if one of those teams can nick a game or two in the last round, or last couple, then yeah, could go to anyone. But anyway, that's all we've got time for today. Please do join us tomorrow for a bumper weekly show with Yaz back in the hosting chair. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.